I am sure that everyone in this room has had an experience of a, well, you just had to be there kind of moment in life, where unless you were present for it, any explanation is going to fall short of what the experience was. So I want to share with you one of the stranger, you just had to be there moments from my family. So, and I don't expect you to get it. This is an illustration of you just had to be there. So about 10 or 12 years ago, is my best guess, one of my two sisters, Priscilla and I, were driving with my mother, I believe it was from Los Angeles to San Diego, where my other sister and brother-in-law lived. And during that, 2 to 3 hour drive, depending on traffic, this particular time we were playing, you know, the childhood car games, and we were doing the alphabet game. You know that game where I'm going to, in this case, San Diego, and I'm going to bring an artichoke. And then the next person is, I'm going to San Diego, and I'm going to bring a balloon. So you work your way through the alphabet, and each person, you know the game. Okay, I don't have to explain all the rules to you. So for some reason, I got the letter G, and I choose the word goober. You know, those chocolate-covered peanuts that you get. And for some reason, that struck us as very, very funny. Yeah, it's funny the first time around. Now, it got funnier every time we had to repeat it, which was 20 more times as we worked our way through the rest of the alphabet. By the time we got through it, my sister and I should have had a pit stop, but we didn't, and my mother nearly drove off the road laughing because it was the anticipation of, oh my gosh, we're almost to G, which we're going to say goober, and we said goober, and everyone just bust. Okay, so I get it. It's funny, but you had to be there to get how funny it was. One of the funniest things in my peculiar family that we have shared. Sometimes you do just have to be there to get it. For a total of 4 weeks, I am going to be doing a sermon series on a few principles that I think worship teaches us. And it's not just things that we learn to do in worship, but what I think are deeper principles that are exercised through our practice of worshiping together, and principles that I believe serve us in our lives throughout the whole of our lives. And I began with the assumption that I believe we are made to worship. There's something in the human spirit that naturally responds in the presence of the divine, and we also seem to naturally want to gather with others and share that experience. Whatever the religious or spiritual tradition, worship is not just personal response, but it is our response as a whole body to the presence of the holy. So I think we're made to worship. And I also think the things that we practice in worship are good practice for human living. And that what we practice in worship is, in fact, meant for our daily living. You know, every Sunday, I remind people that we want you to be your authentic self. The person you are outside of this building is the person that you want inside the building. What in this series we're practicing, likewise, the person that you practice being here in this building is the person you're supposed to practice being outside this building. It goes both ways, in and out. What happens here is supposed to spill out into all the other areas of your life. And if that doesn't happen, really, what you do for about an hour or so on a Sunday morning is kind of pointless. Unless you are practicing for the rest of your life. So let's reverse those words on a Sunday morning welcome. Who we practice being inside these walls and doors is who we want to be outside these walls and doors. So for the series, I've picked 4 ways that I think our practice of worship is practice for life. And no doubt there are many, many more, so I'm starting and ending with only 4, or else this would go on endlessly. So last week, the first life lesson that I identified that I believe worship teaches us is the lesson to prioritize. And that is, it teaches us to decide who and what is most important and when. And that ability to prioritize is something that we will need to face over and over again in our lives at some point, inevitably, if not often, to decide who and what is important and when. So the second lesson that I believe worship teaches us flows directly from the first, and that second lesson is to show up. Just show up. Because you can decide that something is important, and in your head you can make it a priority and then not do a blessed thing about it. To not show up for what you say is important. You know, it's like that New Year's resolution to get fit. And you really sincerely intend to be more healthy, but you happen to never show up at the gym. Or you happen to never show up in the fresh produce aisle of the supermarket. You can have the right priority and set the very best intention and not follow through. We can fail to show up. And worship teaches us to show up. I still recall my first Sunday worship at MCC, which is next month, 31 years ago. Yes, I was a mere child. No. I was a college, oh, I heard that. Mental note taken. I was my senior year of college, you can do the math. And I went to Sunday worship actually as a project for a class I was in. I really didn't intend to go and have any sort of worship or religious experience. I completely thought, oh, this couldn't possibly be a real church. So I went as research. Now, mind you, I had been raised in a Presbyterian household that very faithfully attended. I had, and this is no exaggeration, by that point in my life, at the age of 20, I could count on one hand the number of Sundays I had not been in a worship service. I mean, when we vacationed, we would go to the worship services in the campground or the closest Presbyterian church, and if unfortunately there wouldn't be a local Presbyterian church, we might stray to the Methodists or the Lutherans. Worst case scenario. That was back in the day, of course. So really, by the age of 20, I had been to worship on Sunday, literally, do the math, more than 1,000 times. I had gone to worship. When I went to that MCC service in September of 1983, I stepped through those doors, gathering about 17 people, and at the end of it all, it felt like I had been to worship for the very first time in my life. And it wasn't so much that they did things so dramatically different, but it was because that was the first time all of me showed up for worship. Now, I had long been aware that I was gay, but I was never aware, or maybe barely aware, that that was a part of me that I had never allowed to show up to worship. Now, certainly God knew that I was gay. We had long arguments about it, mostly one-sided arguments about it. But I had practiced leaving part of me behind, not bringing my full self to show up and worship. 1,000 times I had been to worship in body, but had never allowed myself to be fully present. What part of you needs to show up in worship that has never done that before? Now, it should be obvious that I don't just mean showing up to worship with your body, although that's important because you can't be present and leave your body behind. But let me add, if you do have a job or a ministry task and don't show up, we do scramble at the last minute to make substitutions. Our worship coordinator and our usher greeter team, they would tell me you really should have said people should show up with their bodies. But it is more. The point is deeper and greater than that. You know, have you ever had a conversation with someone who was right there in front of you, but you knew they really weren't there? Their bodies were in front of you, but oh, they might be posting on Facebook or looking for that all-important text message that may be on its way or looking at everybody else in the room except for you, you know that they are not present even though their body is there. Showing up is about being present, not just with our body, but with our full attention. Because you know that first and fundamental spiritual practice of all of them is pay attention. And we can't pay attention if we're not present, if we haven't shown up. Worship teaches us the value of showing up. Worship is an invitation to God's party. Are we going to show up? That reading that we hear from Luke is the parable. It's called the parable of the great banquet or the great supper. It is one of the great teaching stories of Jesus. Now, in this setting in Luke, Jesus apparently is not one to miss a teaching opportunity. This is set in Luke's gospel as the final in a collection of three parables that are about dinner parties set at dinner tables. And they are set in this context while Jesus is at dinner at the home of prominent religious leaders. Now, this story, this parable, actually has a parallel in Matthew and a parallel in the Gospel of Thomas. And the settings and the punchlines at the end are a little bit different. But this is a core story that, because of its early layer in the Christian tradition, we can have pretty good confidence that this is actually a story that Jesus told in some way. As such, it's a parable, so it's not talking about a real dinner party, although some of us might recall parties that we would throw and no one had showed up. But it's an allegory. It is about the kingdom or the dominion of God. The host, who is God, is preparing this banquet. In Matthew, it's actually called a wedding banquet. All the invitations have been sent out. And when everything is ready, a servant is sent to follow up to all of those who are invited, and all of them decline. One, I just bought a new field. Sorry, I can't make it. Another, I just bought some oxen. I've got to take them for a test drive. Sorry. Another one, I just got married. I'm sure you will understand that I cannot come to the party. Now, those excuses, good, bad, or indifferent, everyone had an excuse not to come to the party. But the story doesn't end there, does it? There is still going to be a party. So the host sends the servant out to gather up, bring in the last and the least, is how it's described. And then these great words, even after that's done, the servant said, there is more room. There's more room at this party. So the servant goes out again with the charge to more aggressively actually compel, not force, but really urge everyone to come to this party. And it ends with words that might sound a little difficult. None invited will taste the dinner. Now, I don't think those are angry words necessarily, but a host who is just disappointed and sad and stating a fact, the ones I invited are missing out. Jesus gives us this image of a God who invites us to show up. It's not a cranky teacher who's taking attendance. This is a party host who has laid out a feast and a banquet and is ready to have a good time. Will we show up? Now, let me be clear again. It's not just about showing up on Sunday morning, because if it were, I would be preaching to the choir because you're already here. It's a life lesson, because God invites us to show up over and over again every day, all of our lives. That reading by Bob Goff says it's the invitation that he gets daily that he is tempted to turn down all the time. We all have excuses not to show up. What's yours? Goff uses the image about moving from the bleachers into the field. why do we stay in the bleachers? I think there's one thing behind our excuses not to show up. It's easier not to show up, and we're afraid if we do that something bad might happen or we might make a fool of ourselves. It's less painful than showing up. It's less risky than showing up. But faith isn't about being secure or about being safe. It is about risk. God offers an invitation to life and asks, will you put some skin in the game? Will you put some skin in the game? Isn't that what the incarnation of God in Christ actually was? God put skin in our game, risked it all to connect with our lives, to show up. We have been issued an invitation. God has shown up and is throwing a party. Are we going to show up or not? Are we going to be present? What do we miss if we don't show up? We know that we will miss what God is preparing to give. Now, I occasionally use this saying, sometimes in exasperation. When I say, we're here, God is here, something will happen. I usually say that when all of my best laid plans seem to not be following through, but God is here, we are here, something will happen. And I do think that's a good theological statement, because I believe that in a God who is fully present and doing something. And if we show up and are fully present, how can our presence and God's presence together not do something magnificent together? That's what we'll miss if we don't show up. And there's something else that might be missed if you don't show up. We might miss what your presence gives to somebody else. You know, I often say that you may be the most important person that someone meets today. Sometimes we show up not because we need something or want something, but it's because you and I have something to give to someone else. We know not what. We don't need to know. But if we show up, we can offer a gift. And you can only share that gift if you show up. So what you are doing here and now is very good practice. Keep it up. You decided that it was important enough for you that you wanted to be here this morning, and you chose to show up and be present here and now, to be present to these people, to be present to the presence of God in this place. That is good practice, so keep it up. Because we learn small and big things through worship. And they're lessons that aren't just for Sunday morning. Worship is practice for lives.